Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
American Eric Robison is a Grammy Award nominated singer, songwriter, producer, and Howard University alum. Eric continues to break boundaries as an independent artist in an industry dominated by major labels. He has achieved major milestones in his career, from being a successful songwriter and producer for notable acts such as Jill Scott, Music Soul Child, Dwele, Vivian Green, and countless others, to headlining sold-out tours across the country. Eric is celebrating over 20 years as an independent artist. Eric was nominated in 2010 and 2011 for a Grammy Award in the Best Urban Alternative Performance category. He was the recipient of the Underground Artist of the Year BETJ Virtual Award with Ryson Patterson in 2008, and he became the first independent artist to be nominated for a BET Award in 2007. Eric is a former professor at the legendary Berklee College of Music in Boston, and in 2025 he released his 18th studio album, Beautifully All Over the Place. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Eric Robison.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
But I'm home, man, in New Jersey for the day. You know, he's jumping around. And
how do you maintain balance in your energy? Because as you know, or some people don't know, you guys have a lot of hecticness in and out of a suitcase, out of hotels, on a stage, on a plane, on a train, on a car, in a car. How do you personally maintain energy and a sort of mental and life balance?
Try to maintain a healthy perception diet, you know. What I tell everybody is that it's really never going to be balanced. What you have to do is, how present can you be in the moments that you have? You know what I mean? I'm only home for one day, really, a day and a half. How connected can I be with my dad who's sitting here? How connected can I be with my wife, my kids? And when I get on stage, how connected can I be on stage? But you also got to make sure, you know, with a perception diet, you have to pull back from certain things, like a regular diet, so that you can perceive the opportunity as beautiful it is. It's an honor to talk with you and share these. If someone would be interested to ask me questions, it's an honor to get on stage. It's an honor to spend time with my family, you know? So when you put things in the right perspective, you won't really let the anxiety or the stress of how little time or how much obligation is needed to really become overwhelming, because it can't get overwhelming. You got to work on it, you know what I mean? But it's something that I try very hard to stay in front of, you know, so that I can really appreciate the minutes that I have.
Okay, now let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, cool, I want to be in this music creative world? And how did that journey progress?
Right before I became a teenager, my dad won a CD at a family reunion. That CD was a group called Commission. And I remember I listened to the CD while ironing my clothes, and I noticed that my clothes were wet. And I was ironing clothes, getting ready for school, and I didn't realize that I was listening to the music, and I started crying on top of my clothes. And I stopped. I remember this day like it was yesterday, and I looked at the little, you know, CD player, and I just stared at it. And I remember saying, whatever that is, I want to do that. Like, whatever I'm feeling right now, I want to do that. And, you know, up to that point, I was writing poems and, of course, dibble-dabbing and singing and just a plethora of things. But I think that was the time where I was like, hey, you know, what is this? And looking more into it. Of course, by the time I got into high school and really started doing a lot of theater, or she even said once I got to college, the opportunity that this might be something you could actually do for a living went to another level. But by that point, I was fully dedicated to the arts anyway, you know, 100%.
Coming out of college, then I know you were fully dedicated, but how did that next step of now, okay, being successful, how did those journeys happen?
Well, you know, it was interesting as you say that, because coming out of college, there's this what you think is successful. That's what's really successful. So, I mean, I ran into a lot of brick walls, a lot of failed record deals, a lot of things didn't work. And, you know, I might have been a struggling artist trying to find my way. And I'm looking back now, I'm happy because in that I was able to find myself more and find what I really thought success would be and what success looked like for me, as well as what the type of songwriter and artist that I wanted to be. Getting a record deal was easy, in my personal opinion. Keeping a record deal, keeping an audience, was actually very hard. So I think the artist that I was when I first got a record deal, when the second time I got a record deal, I struggle to worry if that person would still be around right now doing music, because I don't think I was the songwriter I wanted to be yet. Write a good enough song and sing good enough to gain some attention, but was I the artist that like a Bill Withers or Al Green or Roberta Flack that I really looked up to, has a plethora of work? And I don't even know if I reached that level yet. Still always work in progress, but at that time I know my pen, as well as the deal that I was going into, wasn't set up enough where I would think that 25, 30 years later you and I would be talking.
Why do you say it's difficult or hard to keep a record deal and an audience?
Well, especially when the majors, when you think of it, you know, okay, A&R or president of a label really finds you interesting and you have a right song that all matches up. You have to win over that entire building. If the marketing team or the A&R department or the president of the label is not in a stable condition, presidents change or whatever, it's hard to make sure that entire building is in one accord to then put some art out to the world that everyone in the world goes, wow, that's nice. Yay. You know, so for every Usher, for every Erykah Badu, for every D'Angelo or Anthony Hamilton or whatever, there's hundreds of artists that just miss. And as a songwriter that I was for years, I watched that. I watched just a countless amount of people make albums that never came out. And it hurt. It hurt watching that. It scared me. I didn't want to be that. And I think that's what really led me to going like the independent route, was I just didn't want to be part of that lost art. That was a situation with the deals. And then the president leaves or a new president comes in. It's a whole line change. It gets really difficult. It's a lot more political. And I don't really always want to do it to politics. Say, hey, man, let's just deal with the art and see what happens. And, you know, sink or swim, I think that's the way I've always enjoyed handling it.
Having seen and observed that experience of that time with artists maintaining the record deal, do you feel, because the attention span of people these days is maybe 5 seconds, much less than what it was before, do you think it's even harder now in these days to maintain a record deal? Because it's not, oh, what's the next best thing? What's the next best thing? Or do you still feel it's sort of the same?
What's different now? I think people are learning that, one, they don't need the record deals as much. And a record deal can also provide a different, but there's still a huge level of success and failure in that record. Not everybody's going to be Drake. Not everybody's going to be Kendrick Lamar. There's still a lot of people going to get lost in those deals, but in that chance of getting lost or doing whatever, I think one good thing is that everyone has an opportunity. Problem with that is that everyone has an opportunity, right? So now everyone's putting out music, everyone's doing stuff. So I've been saying lately that we're not in the music business anymore. We're in the attention business, and we have to work to hold people's attention. And even right now where, you know, streaming doesn't pay that much and things of that nature, what it does is that the music still validates. We have more billionaire musicians, artists than we've ever had.
Okay.
And they didn't become billionaires because of the music. The music validated them to then be able to make billions off of something else. Without the music, I don't think we're buying Kanye sneakers or Jay-Z buying into Live Nation and all these different things.
Yeah.
But I do think that if we look at it, that we have you can build a core unit of fans who will support you, build with you, and you can build it up. It just takes time. And it's just a different muscle. Whereas, you know, with this new album, we're not putting the album immediately on streaming platforms. We're waterfalling it, just releasing a song a month just to elongate the conversation. Because even with the last album, you put a whole album out and people will devour it in 2 months. They devour music so fast. And they'll be like, what else you got? And you're like, I just worked 2 years on that. That's all I got right now, you know? So we're trying to slow that process down as much as possible. I mean, because I think really even having a new single, having new ways to talk about it, still can keep people excited, still can keep people talking, but just handing all the art at the same time to me just doesn't feel right in this season we're in the business, you know? So we're going to waterfall it and slow it down a little bit.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for all the hard work you do. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the thank yous, and so forth. Obviously, you're independent, so you may or may not know that physical is on a massive upsurge around the world. 2 years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Also last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge for exchange purposes, and there needs to be quite a big amount of exchanges daily for a product to be in this basket for tax purposes. And because of the upsurge of CDs, CDs are now again back in the basket. And the research is showing that it's the teenagers, the younger kids that are diving into this world, not necessarily the older nostalgic people. And then again, as you've referenced, we've got the streaming and the payment and all those different consumptions of music that people use for it. What are your further observations of the landscape at the moment?
So I'm 100% in agreement with you that physical is on the uptick. And I would even say this, that, you know, with the new album, we have vinyl, and we're making the vinyl public now. And if you can come to the website and get that, as well as we're bringing a whole new digital presentation. If not just a digital download, here's the experience. Here's all the artwork that I put for every song. Here's the videos. Here's whatever. So when you buy the album, you buy an experience, because I really want people to know who played what, who did what work we put into this. I also feel like, at least in my demographic, even me pressing a vinyl or even pressing up CDs, that close to half of my audience is buying the CDs, don't have a CD player anymore, don't have a record player anymore. They're just buying it because they want a keepsake. So even with the album, we're giving them a digital download where they can still put it to their phone and listen to it. But it's a subscription business. You know, I have a Patreon page, it's called The Process, where people subscribe to follow me in the studio. They've had the album for the last year. Every song when I worked on it, they had it as I was working on it. And so I think there's other streams of revenue and other streams of connection that you can involve in, because people are still hungry for the art. The only difference is now I'm not competing with D'Angelo or Raheem Devon. I'm competing with the phone. I'm competing with everything else that you have on your phone, Instagram, Facebook, you know, Candy Crush or whatever. Am I making enough art, or putting it in front of you enough times that will make you put the other app down and listen to the song? You know what I mean? And that's why I said we're in the attention business, because we're not necessarily battling. You know, 20 years ago, I was battling with NDIRE. You know what I mean? And all love. I love NDIRE, so I'm going to say that in the back. But we're battling for space. Her song's playing. Wow, that's cool. All right, listen to my song. Now it's not even the songs. I'm battling with, you know, the FaceTime conversation you're having with your best friend now, or the podcast that you listen to on the way to work. We're battling different things now, but we have to still find ways to make sure they're interesting. So for me, we're just as much a t-shirt company as we're a record label now. Yeah, because it's all art. We took a long time in designing this hat and figuring out what we want to do. Same thing with the t-shirts. Same thing with the CDs or the albums. So the songs, I think you should express yourself in the best way you possibly can. And if someone's willing, you know, there's always somebody out there who's going to buy the cap, the vinyl, the CD, and come to all the shows. And we're just trying to find that person. So that's really cool to hear that the younger group are now going back and investing in CDs as well. That's good to know.
Tell us about the latest album, the new music. You've got collaborations with a couple of people. So tell us what's happening in the space in the next period of time.
The album is called Beautifully All Over the Place, which is the best way to describe where I'm in my life right now. Flying to Atlanta tomorrow, you know, Chicago the following week, and just got back from St. Louis to Cleveland. But also just beautifully all over the place emotionally. I'm just grateful to have the opportunity. And musically, I was that way creatively. The new album is 10 songs that really stretch from my imagination. I think people will find a sound that's similar to the Eric Robertson sound that you've enjoyed, but you also see me stretching unlike I've done in any other album. And one difference also was I intentionally went after certain people to collaborate with, whereas usually whoever just shows up in the studio is who shows up on the songs. But Avery Sunshine is on the song, BJ Chicago Kid, introduced an amazing songwriter. One of my favorite songwriters, a guy named Jay Sean Champion, is on two of the songs. One of my heroes, Najee, is on the album as well. One of the most incredible singer-songwriter producers, young lady Mickey Miller, is on the record as well. So my goal is hopefully that you listen to the album and discover some, first of all, people that you love. Oh, man, I love Najee, man. And even the song I did with Najee is just different than what Najee and I would do. You know, it's something different. But I also hope that you leave the record discovering something new about me and discovering something new about another artist, such as Sean Champion or Mickey Miller, that you go check out their music because they're incredible too.
How come this time you were more intentional with who you were collaborating with compared to previously whoever showed up?
I don't know. I think I was just, I think it was just a different spirit. I think usually I'm kind of just making a record and just kind of real loose about it, like, oh, whatever happens, happens. This time I was, when I was making a record, I didn't just kind of shrug off who I might hear. I heard BJ Chicago Kid on this, so I should have the audacity to go like, BJ, what you doing? Hey, man, I'm sending something to you. And guess what? I mean, mind you, this is what I would tell you is that I probably sent a song to everybody. I'm not going to say any names, but most people didn't hear back or say no. I mean, I shot for the stars. If I could get Jay-Z on a song, I would do it. You know, these people said yes. These people were down. You know, it worked out. And I think maybe a lot of times I wasn't always intentional because we lean away from, while we're in a creative moment, creative spirit, we lean away from the no's. We don't want to really hear rejection. And mind you also, if I say this like this, I know there's one artist, I want to put him on blast, where it wasn't that they probably weren't down to do the song. It's just the song was so different. It was different. And I also didn't want to send a song. Well, this is the kind of song you sing, so I want you to do a song. I want to stretch. I want to stretch personally. I want them to stretch as well. And that's why I appreciate what Najee, when he heard the song, he's like, oh, this is different. It's like, yeah, let's push the tempo. Let's go here. And even every Sunshine, I'm excited for everybody here to duet with that. It's different, you know. It's different for her and I as well. So I think just having fun. And the interesting is that it opened up a season of, I did so many songs in the last 2 years. I'm just excited about even what's coming after this, because there's a lot more collaborations, a lot more songs. And even if you think this stuff is left, get ready. This is the test to see how far I really can go, you know?
Same with me. Whenever I reach out for interviews, you know, I've got the publishers like Raphael or publicists who I interact with. But when I reach out, I'm like, okay, if they come back and say, sorry, not at this time, whatever, I say, cool, I'll be back in 6 months' time checking for this availability at that time. Or I email until I get a response. I don't drive them mad, like not every day, but like every 3-4 weeks. Hey, can we set up an interview? 4 weeks later, hey, can we set up an interview? It's like, well, why not? You know, respond to me,
right,
and then let's do it.
I think that level of work and consistency is important. I think what we have to remember a lot of times is that maybe the no is happening not because they don't want to or that you're not good. Things have to line up.
Yeah.
I have people ask me all the time for collaborations on records. And, you know, while I was working on this album, I had to say either it's a no right now, or if you can wait a couple of months, it's a yes. So I think you have to understand the meaning behind the no.
Yes.
Right, and trust. But for you yourself, and this, I'm the same way, we have to work towards our yeses. No one's ever going to really pay attention to how many no's we receive. They're only going to celebrate the yes. So when you get the big interview, they're like, man, how'd you get the interview? I got the interview because 1,000 people told me no until I finally got this yes. And I think once you do that, you know, if you didn't know, we're writing a book that's coming out shortly after the album. It's called This Beautifully All Over the Place as well. And one of the things in the book, it says, you know, as artists, it's just to complete it. It's just to give everything a try. We make a living off what works. We don't take personal what doesn't. So I don't take the no's personal. I just prepare so that when the yes comes, we can build off of it. We can market it. We can, you know, live, build revenue, build more fan base off of the yeses. So we just work to the yeses.
I love that. You gave me a massive aha moment. Thank you. I appreciate it because I needed to hear that now. What do you enjoy about performing live?
Oh, man. The freedom of it, you know, to me, it's always a conversation to a crowd. I remember when I struggled to get 30 people to come see me. So to see a crowd in front of you that know the words, that have a history, there's a beautiful engagement with that. But also, I think really being able to swim within the music, have an enormously beautiful band. And those are my brothers and sisters, and we make some great music together. So just any opportunity to be able to sing And to me, it's like swimming. I love to swim. So being able to get on stage, but also, you know, we make up songs on stage. Improvisation is a very important part of my show. So at any point, it could make a different turn. If a couple walks in with yellow pinstripe outfits matching each other, best believe I'm stopping the show so I can acknowledge they got on yellow pinstripe or something, you know. I've cried at shows. I've laughed. You know, we've danced. We go through whatever. And I have no, that's the time I'm an artist. So I don't think there's any point where on the stage that I'm not willing to show 100% of myself at the time.
Okay, so I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 5 years, 50 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five other artists once you finish this conversation, who would those five artists be? And if you can think of specific songs from them, what songs would you play of theirs?
Radiohead, Everything's the Right Place. Emily King, Radio. Avery Sunshine, Ice Cream Song. Roberta Flack, The First Time I Ever Saw Your Face. And Busta Rhymes, Put Your Hand As My Eyes Can See.
So, Eric, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Thank you. Thank you for giving some time, an ear, a listen. And I'm beautifully all over the place, and I hope you are as well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.